You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
We'll get to David Sampson in just a second here because you've got the baseball lockout, and I don't know that a whole lot of people listening to this understand the business at the level that David does in sports. So I look forward to hearing what he has to say about the lockout. But before we get to that, Mike Ryan has been a genuine insider the last few days. I've seen him on calls regarding the Heat and tampering, and he's doing reporting, and he's leaving the room in order to gather news, and he's a mover and shaker now in Miami.
What is happening to me?
I don't understand. It came out of nowhere. I've seen people ask, when did that guy become the insider? Isn't he the guy who shouts far away from the microphone as the hockey guy?
I just want to be me, dude.
He wants to be versatile.
What a win over the Caps, by the way. BT Dubs, brunette, digging deep, doing all the right things. How did we lose to the Kraken? God damn it.
4-1. What the hell happened? 4-1 at home.
Let me tell you something. If I ever see a Kraken out there in the Pacific Ocean, I've got words.
Okay. I've got words. I don't think we're... Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Do words do anything against the Kraken? The University of Miami, though, I am now hearing this will be wrapped up in some form in a week, or they're hoping
by next week.
The power brokers are trying to wrap this up by next week. But you've been working this a hell of a lot harder than I have. And
I was at a dinner meeting last night, and I got up from the table and I left for 30 minutes to work the beeps.
You are a total loon. The last couple of days you've decided I want to be sort of Woj, but for everything. I don't want to just be limited to being just Woj or Schefter. I want to be both Woj and Schefter.
It's absurd. What's going on here is I care deeply about this program. I have a media platform. I am technically a member of the media. I do have sources, but I am driven by the motivation of wanting the program that I give a considerable amount of money to year over year to raise its standards and turn things around and remind me of my youth. There is no excuse for what's happening. We've done that time and time again, it's a weird dynamic.
Before we get to the information, I do want all the listeners who may just be picking this up at this moment to understand what it is that's happening with Mike and this program. I know he annoys you and me. I went to the school with all of his homerism and the way that he pollutes the show with so much University of Miami talk when the University of Miami has not been relevant for a really long time. And it feels like we spend too much time talking about that program. But he cares about it. And again, I went to the school. He spends his money as a booster for the school. I do not. He cares about the program, and it hurts him to give money. It hurts because he's giving a lot of money. It hurts to, and then go to the games and be sad because there are 20,000 people there and you're losing to Virginia. So
just know that when I made this financial commitment to the University of Miami, I wasn't expecting no longer working with Chelsea. So that was a miscalculation on my part.
Yes. And then Chelsea, for those of you who don't know, I mean, I can say this. You're not saying it for some reason.
We love Chelsea here. We love Chelsea Football Club. They were great partners. They moved in a different direction.
David, do you know what
happened? I look forward to working with them in the future.
David, do you know what happened? Mike Ryan, we'll get to the UM information in a second, but Mike Ryan was working for Chelsea.
It's the David Sampson show, and has become an inquisition of Mike.
Not because I want his opinion on this. He's working for Chelsea, and it's a propaganda podcast that he's trying to apply journalistic sensibilities to. It's a team broadcast, but he's trying to make it fair, and he makes it good, and it becomes America's most popular soccer podcast. And then I don't know what happened, but they parted ways amicably, evidently, and they turned Chelsea Mic'd Up, which had an M-I-K in it for Mike, into the same thing. It looks exactly the same. And they just changed the K to a C, and there Mike was erased. When it became Chelsea Mic'd Up and Mike Ryan got erased, and they just saved his salary and kept the feed, and it was devious doings.
it's just business.
It's nothing, nothing personal.
It's nothing personal. You got to respect your value in this industry. And I put my foot down thinking that there was a mutual respect of one's value, and there wasn't.
You played your card a little too hard, I would say, with Chelsea, Mike.
Honestly.
Just a tiny bit too hard.
Yeah, probably, but I am really enjoying my time with my daughter and not having to live and die with every game and in some weeks do multiple recordings. So I'm enjoying my break from it. But let's talk about the university.
We will in a second. But the starting point on this is, can you get a renegotiated deal as a Golden Cane where you go back and look, my situation with Chelsea mic'd up change. Can I have $4,300 back, a percentage back of what it is that I've given you, just because my circumstances change?
Yeah, just take two of the seats in the box. Honestly, that's really a conversation. That's an in-family fight, by the way. Totally left at the
Do you have insight into Miami because you're a booster? Is that why you have all these sources?
So I have, David, I mentioned this yesterday on the show. The booster thing certainly opened up doors for me and gave me sources in certain parts of the program that I didn't have access to before. But I have really good sources, and not at every level, but damn near every level of this specific search. So it's actually really helpful because this particular search is quite muddied. There is a very large board. There are a lot of people that think they have power. There are some people that have real power. There are people that are playing the media through traditional means, the way that you've articulated on this show about how you wanted to get some messaging out there. And there are some Board of Trustee people with real power that are just straight up wilding on Twitter. Just wilding. So I'll get into some of that.
You need to make a call, though. See, the thing about being an insider and a source, if you're going to be in the big leagues, you have to take a position, you have to make a call, and you have to be first, and you have to be right.
Well, I prefer being right.
You know what?
And Bruce Feldman is going to be first on if it's... Here's my prediction. If it's Mario Cristobal, guarantee you, Bruce Feldman is going to be first there. Set him to mobile alerts.
David, you said something interesting there, because I believe what Mike is doing here is more valuable because he's got sources at every layer of this. He's able to actually cut through the bullshit and get to nuanced opinions and, you know, buoyed by facts, telling you where they are minute by minute, exactly where they are, because he knows who the power brokers are. But that doesn't mean he's going to get the coach first. Like, that can leak beforehand in any number of places, and that's you're not interested in being first. You're giving people an accurate appraisal of what's going on in the program. So give them the latest update.
Yeah, that's my motivation. Give you guys the most transparent, accurate view of what's going on, because it's hard, because there's a lot of competing factions here. And my primary motivation is just to elevate the program and turn this thing around. That's what I care about. So last night, I told you in the days leading up to yesterday, not a great sign if your name is out in the media, because the firm has a lot of power. The firm, their job primarily is to not leak names. They want repeat business. They want to be trusted when it comes to these searches. So the firm is not leaking out names. I don't have a direct source with that firm. I wish it did. Shout out to Turnkey.
Salute. Are firms like that useful, David? Are firms, search firms like that, worth any amount of money?
Not at all.
What's bizarre?
There's not one candidate. Firms are used to identify candidates who you would not otherwise be able to identify when you are looking to fill a position. And when the Hurricanes position is open, any candidate who you want knows that it's available. And any candidate who you can't think of that you want knows it's available. So we'll reach out and contact you.
To David's point, it's odd how much the decision maker, the key decision maker in this, Dr. Frank, is leaning on the firm itself to actually cultivate candidates and help make a decision, because historically, universities have very strong opinions about the candidates, and they sort of employ a firm to make sure there are no skeletons in the closet, make sure you're not embarrassed by this candidate. Right, David?
Yeah, that's it. Background checks, things like that. They do vetting. But when you're doing a position like what the Hurricanes are doing, you know, there are other easier, cheaper ways that you can vet and do social media checks and make sure. But again, professional teams have a problem. The Mets hire people and they don't realize what's going on, and then they have to fire them. So there are a lot of landmines that exist. But in theory, when you hire Turnkey, and I know those guys very well, they're not going to come. So if you want to source in turnkey, I'll bring it right to the top. But the problem is that they have no interest in having you as their speaking point, right, as their source, because they get business from other teams by definition not talking to people.
It makes it, it does make it interesting, though, and this is what Julio, this is what Frank has to do in this situation, is lean on the search firm that is impartial or trying to be, instead of the power brokers, then the people who have vested interests and agendas, and he doesn't know who his snakes are and who aren't snakes. Like, he can think things, but he's got to go to somebody that's more neutral than the people doing this.
Right. So I identified one board of trustee member that was leaking stuff out through conventional means. I've put a name on it. It's David Epstein. He's pretty toothless in this. Toothless so much that I can say that what he was doing over the last couple of weeks was effective in making Miami look like a circus. I hate to know that that's his intention, but he kind of represents an old guard and an old mentality that I'm not a fan of.
Should we smoke him out? Epstein.
I have. Fans are like, it creep. Like, I wanted the smoke, and then I saw how Miami fans reacted in his Twitter mentions. Like, just so what? There's like a million board members. Not all of them are going to see eye to eye. Also, not all of them leak stuff out that make Miami seem like a circus. So I'm not the biggest fan of him or his mentality, but I'm not out here to dox someone and for you to go with his mentions and act like a child. All right? That's why you have a board. You have a board to have a bunch of different opinions. Some of those people are going to be pro-Blake, pro-Manny, pro-status quo. David Epstein just so happens to be one of those people. I flatly disagree. I hate that he's using the media to put that agenda out because it makes Miami look like a circus. I thought yesterday Miami was a lot less a circus behind the scenes than I kind of do this morning, just because Dr. Frank is relying on a tighter circle. And we've identified that circle: Joe Echevarria and Rudy Fernandez. Rudy Fernandez is really a more front-facing person.
Why are you laughing? Wait a minute. Hold on. Samson's laughing at this, and Rudy Fernandez isn't talking to reporters. This guy's like...
Rudy Fernandez is talking to some reporters, but he's leaving crumbs, and he's talking to reporters with some intention, but he is playing it closer, certainly a lot closer to the vest than David Epstein or one other Board of Trustee member that we'll get to here in a bit, I'm a fan of.
Why is Samson laughing?
Because that's not a circle. That's not a trust circle.
That's a triangle.
Okay.
It's just a triangle. Frankly, a straight line, because Rudy Fernandez is way more involved in this. I would put him even above Frank, but that's just me.
The final say will be Dr. Frank, and he is leaning on Rudy. But Rudy is caught between two worlds, and this kind of poked its head out last night with all the Eddie Nunez stuff. Now, the Eddie Nunez stuff I found a little funny. I think he overplayed his hand a little bit. Eddie Nunez was indeed a real candidate, because he was a real candidate favored by the Columbus contingent, just like Jurich was. But then when scrutinized by a firm, the firm has different opinions. Now, I have told you repeatedly, as much as I want Mario Cristobal, I would be a little apprehensive about handing over all the keys to Mario Cristobal. No one in college football has that kind of deal. He doesn't have that kind of deal at Oregon.
But they don't have an athletic director right now. No. And so the both positions are open, David. And coaches are in such high demand right now with the salaries that you can pay them in power. If you tell Cristobal he can run the program?
Well, he's just not going to. And are you willing to die on that? I think there's a compromise here, like maybe putting an Alonzo Highsmith or Gino Toretta in a director of football operations role. And then Mario feels like he has another ally. It's not necessarily 2v1. Because AD has final say, but he feels like he has an ally and more security that he even has right now in a program like Oregon.
Can Cristobal, is it possible from here that Cristobal can call his shot on the AD, that the power dynamics in the sport have changed so much? You're now competing for coaches and names.
I don't think so, because I don't think he can just flatly name an AD. And I think that would be a dangerous situation. As much as I want the program to turn around, and as much as I think Mario Cristobal is the right fit, I would stop short of that personally.
But when you get into bidding wars, Mike, when you get to bidding wars...
Wars is money. You make the money work, and I think Miami will certainly make the money work. What is not good if you're Team Cristobal here is that there are very clearly Columbus contingent people that are frustrated they're not getting 100% their way, which leads us to... We got into the Jurich stuff a few days ago. He was obviously favored by that, but was pretty dismissed quickly by the firm and possibly Dr. Frank. That's speculative, but we talked about the problems there. Eddie Nunez was an interesting candidate. Obviously, Columbus contingent favored him. He was a New Mexico athletic director. I had sources over in New Mexico that are like, this can't be for real. Is this guy for real? But he was legitimately favored by some Board of Trustee members and some people with ties to Mario Cristobal. And what he did yesterday was, I think he overplayed his hand. He was talking to some members of the media, and I started getting a little skeptical when I started seeing his name so much out there, because I know exactly how the firm is playing this. But it's not like it was fake and made up. He was a candidate. I think he broke up with Miami before Miami could publicly break up with him to a degree. I think he certainly had frustrations because he was, I know for a fact he feels like he got different messaging along the way, but I don't think he got different messaging from admin and the firm.
But how can you not get different messaging when no one knows who the hell's in charge right here?
Well, I know who's in charge here. It's Dr. Frank. It's Dr. Frank. Rudy has a lot of power here, certainly, but he's caught between two worlds because he's a part of that Columbus contingent. They certainly wanted Eddie Nunez. The firm, I mean, he wasn't up to the standard of the firm right now. And maybe, if I'm speculating, you can't possibly hand over all the keys to one candidate. Whether
David, Mario, do you agree with that?
Are you asking me?
The candidate here is like Mario Cristobal. You can't give him
You understand the difference, Mike, is that you're not hiring a GM and a coach. You're hiring an athletic director and a coach. An athletic director has way broader responsibilities.
Precisely.
Which is why, Dan, a coach cannot serve as both. And a coach cannot choose an AD, because it's not like the AD is putting together the roster the way a GM is, or figuring out who the on-field personnel is.
Oh, no,
the way a GM
but no, but in this case, I believe that if the football program runs all, I do believe when what's happened in the last week, we're headed toward college sports being so much more professional, that if a Nick Saban or somebody says, I'm coming in and I handpick my guy and he's my administrative assistant, he's an athletic director, but he's just here to handle the little things for the program, I'm in charge. I believe coaches could come upon that power very quickly and very soon.
So let's actually cover, like, that's some of the reporting. I don't think Nunez was favored by the firm, very clearly. I think he got out in front of it. He got his name boosted. He's a New Mexico athletic director, for heaven's sakes. But I do know that he was favored by Columbus, the Columbus guys, which is Marcus Lemonis, Jose Mas, Rudy Fernandez being one of them. Alonzo Highsmith has ties. Mario Cristobal obviously has ties. Let's talk about Marcus Lemonis, because this is a really funny dynamic. You know how I chastised David Epstein for trying to remain anonymous and go through traditional media and get his message out there that just perpetuated this loser mentality? Lemonis, I like him. I know he wants what's best for the program. I know he wants stark change in culture. But have you seen his Twitter likes?
No.
Go through his Twitter likes, because he is a part of this Columbus contingent that is very clearly frustrated that they're not getting 100% their way. It is telling. There are tea leaves there that would suggest...
Tea leaves have made an appearance, Samson.
Well, forget tea leaves. I know for a fact Marcus Lemonis was not happy in Tallahassee. 100%. And that was through actions of Blake James, and that was through Manny Diaz's coaching. All right, so... I feel pretty confidently in saying Lemonis isn't the biggest Manny Diaz fan. If you go through his Twitter likes, you would have that notion confirmed to you. He's not the biggest fan of the search firm entirely. Because if you go through his Twitter likes, he's liking that Notre Dame isn't using a search firm. The Columbus contingent would very clearly like to push through their candidate, because it helps lock in the coach that will change this culture and bring Miami back in their eyes. They wanted it with Jurich, and that's why the firm wasn't activated for a week, frustratingly so. To a lot of Miami fans, they wanted it now with Eddie Nunez. I don't know what candidate they would find sufficient. I do think some of the Gino Toretta stuff is real. And I do think that, unlike some of the other
people,
it
makes sense.
He does kind of hold up under the scrutiny of an AD firm. There were reports out there that said he had the AD job locked up. That wasn't true. No one has it locked up right now. There were reports saying the Board of Trustees had decided on him. That I told you yesterday, that's not how this works. But I do think, ultimately, what Mario Cristobal will have to decide from is, yeah, you'll have money. Oregon will probably match whatever Miami puts in front of your plate, right? And you're not running the show there. You have an AD that works with you and supports you, but he's your boss. Will you sign up for having indications that Miami's on the right track? he's a unique candidate because he doesn't need to be convinced of what a fully empowered coach here with resources can do. He's lived it, which is great and easy because that's a tough road to hoe for a lot of candidates, right? Given the national perception of Miami. But if we give you a 2-1, if we give you Alonzo Highsmith, who you wanted to bring on at Oregon, or Gino Toretto, who loves this football program as much as you
or
do.
Or both of them.
Yeah, if we give you that kind of support, it's not going to overtake the final say that the AD has, but you won't feel like it's you versus them. And ideally, they're going to be all in lockstep. Impression that I get is Plan A is still Cristobal. They would prefer Mario Cristobal certainly being in favor of whoever is hired. They're just not going to hand keys to the castle to him. David, I'm curious what you think about this setup. This is obviously kooky, not the way things go. It's a little more circusy than I thought it was yesterday, but I'm actually kind of encouraged by the fact that we're not handing over all the keys to one football head coach.
A little less.
A little a little less power. A little less keys to the castle. Fewer keys to the entire castle, I guess, to Mario Cristobal, considering there's an entire athletic program to run here.
It feels like you're just hedging, though, because if you have the right guy and your interest as a booster is getting the football program back into the position that you think it rightly deserves to be, which I'm not sure it rightly deserves to be because it hasn't been there in so long and you're holding on to something from so many years ago. But what's wrong with giving the keys to someone and giving them the most power possible? And you just say, hey, we're bringing in a Bill Belichick type, or we're bringing in somebody who has done it before, a Nick Saban type, and we're letting him do whatever he wants because that's how desperate we are. The keys to the castle argument comes from ownership directive when things are so bad that they need to have some sort of runway of credibility where someone is in charge of everything. And then if they fail, it's totally their fault because, hey, it can't be me anymore because they made every decision. So I would think you'd want someone to have that.
If I may, I don't just want the football program to return to the glory days. That's obviously the program that matters most to me. But I want all the athletics to be elevated. And I think with Miami, there is already an example of why you don't give one entity, one family, one cartel, one contingent all the power. Because Miami has a situation right now, because Blake James had a fundraising background, he favored the DeMare family. Paul DeMare is one of the biggest donors in that school. Guess who the baseball coach is? His son. Now you have a situation in which that baseball team is underperforming. It's kind of a messy situation. If you bring in a new AD, he's going to evaluate that once great baseball program and be like, we got to get this guy out of here. Now you've pissed off a donor that's recently come into some health issues, but it's a dicey situation. You gave the entire program the keys to that castle to one family, and now you're underperforming and you seemingly have no way out.
Well, let me ask both of you this question, because David, I think in most instances you would say that you have to have a clear and firm leader, and Mike is saying more broadly, you don't give the keys to one family. But may I suggest, is this a stupid thing to suggest? If the family you're giving the keys over are a whole bunch of people that are the only ones who actually lived the last time that Miami was good, that you're using all the resources you have, not just Ed Reed, but you're giving jobs to, if you really want to get in this game, okay, here come Gino Toretta, Mario Cristobal, and Alonzo Highsmith, and the administrative people that they need so that they could protect Hurricane Lore. Like, you know, Gino's a good business mind. Like, why are we, do we need to give it to one person? Does it have to be a power struggle, or can it be the family from the past getting together? All of these guys, like, man, Mario can just call Gino. They're boys from look at what they went through. Like, these people, Alonzo Highsmith. Now, I don't know if it gets too messy there, but can't you be creative and figure something like that out?
Do you know what's actually happening, though, is that what Frank has to do, he's got a little piece of paper and a calculator when he's talking to Rudy, and they're talking to the boosters and they're talking to the board members, and they're actually doing calculations based on who's going to be upset with what hire and who's going to give what amount with what hire. Because it's like endowing a chair, right? If you can support a faculty member and you will pay to endow that chair, that faculty member will get tenure and will be a part of your organization. So there's more math going on than I think that you're giving credit for. And that's Frank's job, frankly, as president. He's got to get the most money into the organization, which is Miami, in order not just to spread it between baseball and football, but it is to spread it to all the sports and then to all the capital facilities and all the other expenses of the university. So I believe the winner of this sweepstakes will have everything to do with who on the board of trustees will end up giving the most money to support the hire that they decide on.
I don't think that that answers my question, though, of how this can be done creatively with all of these power brokers from a different time that are trying to get in the game together. Why not use all of the resources? If they're all boys, they're all friends. Gino Demari was a player soon after their time. Like, they're the guys who built it.
You have to have a clear line, chain of command. You can't have a four-headed monster.
No, but so how do you do it creatively?
And if I may, you need to have people with an administrative collegiate background. You have to.
No,
this is how you can get Lynn Swann.
I understand, Mike. I'm not saying just hire. Yes, but I'm saying make the athletic directors handle the paperwork, the bureaucracy. Handle. Like, I'm saying make the athletic director someone who has power, but no. You know who we've entrusted this program to? This group of people.
Yeah, football is ruling all. Like, even though I mentioned the other athletics, they've committed $20 to $30 additional million dollars, and that's the floor, by the way, to the football program. Like, the only money that I'm hearing about being thrown around and resources being thrown around right now, they understand football, there's trickle-down economics with the football program. That's their central focus. I do think having someone that Mario Cristobal obviously wanted to hire over in Oregon, like an Alonzo Highsmith, as an ally, as someone of influence, someone with a talent evaluation background that can help with the portal and such, someone that can go into a room with an athletic director, and if you need backup, he is there for you, is the right answer. But I do think final say needs to go to that athletic director. I think they need to be more business ops, more comms experience base if this is indeed the setup, because you have people that understand what the football program is that probably don't have much interest in scheduling volleyball.
Can we reach out to Toretta and Alonzo Highsmith? I'd like to talk to, like, just both of them. I think
they're not really talking. Like,
I just
we
think
can try.
We can have an honest conversation about
it's
just
not
stuff.
Good. Let me be abundantly clear. If your name is out there right now, it's not a good thing. It hasn't been a good thing for damn near anyone. And I think they would be wise to button up. I have actually reached out to Lamonis. I haven't heard back. I've sent him a couple messages. I'm like, you're trying to talk through your likes. He knows what he's doing. And credit to him, he's putting his name on it to a degree. It's kind of the same thing as Epstein is doing, but he's doing it anonymously and from, like, a totally different mindset that I don't agree with. I'm down with the Columbus contingent's effort to raise the bar here. I'm just a little apprehensive to give them all the power.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Le Batard.
Valedictorian.
Thank you, Roy. That's a tough one for Stugatz.
Well, yeah. No, that's up. No, listen.
What is second place? Do you know what second place is for a graduating high school senior if you don't get... Well, do you know what first place is?
MVS, most valuable senior.
Do you know what it is to finish in second place, what it's called?
Runner-up.
Runner-up on graduating.
First loser.
Stugatz.
The best graduating senior is the valedictorian.
VV.
Why VV?
I don't know. Is that how you spell it?
You think it starts with two Vs?
Silent V at the beginning.
Oh, is that what? Yeah, of course. Everyone knows that.
What do you mean the VV?
No, you're valedictorian.
What?
Oh, he thinks it's valedictorian.
Because
they won first place, Victorian.
I mean, I spent my whole life thinking that. It's crazy.
Second place.
Solutions.
Not math.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
David, let's switch over to the big sports story of the day, which is baseball locking out for the first time in a very long time. Why are you laughing?
Because I guess it depends on your audience. We just had 38 minutes of what some people would say is the biggest sports story of the day, which is what Mike was releasing in terms of his news, Ray Miami. What was the news that you released, Mike, exactly?
Well, that I gave you insight on the Eddie Nunez story.
It was context. The Eddie
you don't
Nunez
think that was
story,
news? Like,
the Eddie Nunez story is not the biggest story in sports. The lockout in baseball.
This is the local hour. It's the biggest story on the local hour, David. So, welcome to your weekly local hour appearance.
Listen, I have great respect for the number one show in the country, and what you decide is the number one story. I was merely asking, what exactly did we learn in the last 38 minutes?
What we learned is that the Columbus contingent doesn't have all the power, and they are frustrated. And is Mario Cristobal willing, we can speculate, is Mario Cristobal willing to die on the hill that he gets either everything or nothing? It's actually interesting because you have Rudy Fernandez, who's caught between two different worlds. Why are you laughing?
Why are you laughing?
You don't think so?
I'm laughing.
Are you saying that this is just not a newsy bite?
What are you
like? How can
at?
I said?
Yeah, this is
how
not,
can I fit this into
I
a
was
headline?
Arguing before you started that this is the context that people need, and Dave is just telling you, hey, what we've spent the last 38 minutes doing. Can you tell us what the news is you're breaking? And you're weaving a tapestry of taking people inside, but the news is about Eddie Nunez. And nobody wants Eddie Nunez news. Like, nobody was asking
for that. Here's the news-nez. All right? Here's the news-nez.
I was going to try that, but I was afraid of it. I thought I was going to get it wrong.
Yeah, I even like kind of.
I feel like you could have given us that in a 4-minute block.
And people wouldn't have cared about Eddie Nunez.
But there's nuance here.
Either.
There's nuance, and you have a sports business background and a collegiate administrative experience, not necessarily so much, David, but I'm curious about some of these things off of you, but you're just looking at me kind of funny, and maybe you're speaking for the audience, which would be the first time in recorded history.
That's okay.
Hold on. That's my point. I am not pretending to speak for the audience because you know your audience, and you are way better at your job than I am at mine. I was trying to understand what's the takeaway.
I believe that's he's it. Got you cornered on this, Mike, because you have been talking for 40 minutes. And
the takeaway is that there are very influential people with actual real power that are growing frustrated with the firm's power. And if you're interested in power grabbing and power dynamics and circus optics, I think the most recent development with growing public frustration with people that actually have influence, like Lemonis, all right? I think that's actually news.
Why are you laughing? You're laughing at Lemonis? Why, Samson, why are you laughing at Lemonis?
I'm laughing at that is an interesting piece of content to give to people, except when you say that there's a power dynamic, you have to go the next step, which is which is the most powerful? Who are the two competing factions? And who should we expect to, at the end of the day, be the ones raising their arms saying, I am the omniscient, powerful group?
Well, thank you for listening to me, David. I made it very clear this is Dr. Frank's call.
Yes.
He's got an inner triangle of Joe Echevarria and Rudy Fernandez.
He's the president of Miami.
Yeah, and
that's
He's leaning heavily on this search firm.
That
in ways
is the
that
news
most
that
don't.
We've gotten
yes.
after 40 minutes.
Congratulations,
the president of the
you
university
cracked it.
Is in charge of the university. That is correct. That is the news that was just broken.
He's never driven
My
this
bad.
Before. Well, you know, that's revelatory when it comes to Miami because he's always taken a back seat to shit, and that's why we're in the position that we're in right now. Now, I don't necessarily trust him. This could all blow up in our
That's
faces.
Right. Now, well, it is funny that this guy is like doing the Cliff Notes version. He's wandering over to the athletic program as the president of the university. And in 2 months, hey, can you guys download me on this whole it's a Canes thing you wouldn't understand? Can someone download me on 50 years? Who's Alonzo Highsmith?
Yeah, send him the what? Urban Dictionary entry for swagger.
Who's Gino Toretta? Who are what? I should watch the 30 for 30 by Billy Corbin on the U? Like what? He needs to get
that's why Rudy, but that's why Rudy is so much more powerful here. Because if you think that Dr. Frank is actually getting a history lesson and actually cares about the Alonzo Highsmith, Gino Toretta, and the Lucchese family and all the different things going on, he wants to get this done as quickly as possible in a way that brings the most money as possible into his program.
As possible is interesting because I think there are certain things, if you are a firm believer in plan A like I am, things have to kind of play out the way that they are. But to your point, if you're saying it's all Rudy, Rudy's frustrated then by the Nunez thing because he was Team Nunez. He did like Nunez as a candidate. And his more importantly, his cronies really like Nunez as a candidate, and they are very publicly frustrated. And Rudy is the guy with all the influence in Dr. Frank's ear, as you say. So it's interesting. It's contextual. It's also not a headline. Talk to us about a baseball lockout.
No.
It's nuanced.
Let's not talk about a baseball lockout because right now Mike Ryan has said it for all to hear. And this is the actual news of what he said. We are dangerously close.
The president has power.
To the University of Miami. Well, the president does have power. That's the big piece of news here.
Take it to the bank.
But the secondary news that you're breaking is that with a Nunez here and a Rudy Fernandez there and a Cristobal there, man, the Cuban people are coming for the Miami jobs.
Look at that, Look how far we've come.
Like, the Cuban people are kind of running the Miami program
here.
The
Cuban people have been kind of running Miami point blank, period. You don't have to add the university.
That's right.
Isn't the current coach Cuban?
Yeah.
But now it'll be...
Look at this.
That's right.
We don't need to interview a minority candidate because we're all minorities. How about that?
That's right. You see all these Lincoln Rileys and Brian Kelly's movie.
Lane Kiffin is the minority candidate.
All right, David, your interesting takeaways from all the stuff that happened yesterday, money-wise. A lot of people are going to have a hard time understanding that a day before $1 billion in salaries were signed to, and then the sport locks out.
It was all part of the plan. This was one of the great Machiavellian moments of all time by the owners, where you had this frenzy of signings for the sole reason Rob Manfred was able to put in a letter to the fans. Look what we did last week. Look at all the money that the players got, and now the players are going to try to tell you that they don't get enough. Look at how great things are, but the union's going to tell you that they don't have enough power. Are there not enough teams competing? Look at the tanking teams who signed the players, the Detroit Tigers, the Texas Rangers. Every team has a chance to win now with all the money they're spending. It goes right into a letter to the fans, with which Rob released at 12:01. And the letter to the fans was simply started over a year ago. Everything baseball's done leading up to today was with the knowledge that today was coming. We knew there was going to be a lockout the minute Bruce Meyer was hired by the players' union to negotiate, because he was hired to fight. He was hired to not come to an agreement by December 1st, which gave baseball a huge runway of preparation, and they don't screw that up. So every move that's been made has been unbelievably calculated, and it resulted in the letter that was released last night by Rob Manfred.
Letter bothered me, David, because Rob Manfred now on that letter is taking the time to say, well, the players' union is making it so that teams won't be able to be competitive. And he was on this show. He was on this show arguing the merits of tanking. He was arguing why it is the Marlins were not competitive and it was okay. So, I mean, I really do wonder, David, with both Roger Goodell and Manfred, like, I don't know how smart they actually are. Like, is it possible that commissioners can be running things and not be that smart? I'm not saying dumb, just not leader of sports type of smart, meriting their positions.
No, Rob Manfred is extremely smart, and so is Roger Goodell. But remember, they answer to 30 people. So what they are is they're circus performers, because they're juggling all the time, and they're taking the temperature of all the owners, because you have to count to 23 in baseball to make sure you have the support of 23 owners in order for you to keep your job. What I want fans to focus on today is not how greedy owners are, not how greedy players are, millionaires versus billionaires. Focus on the fact that this lockout right now is not doing anything to your 2022 baseball season. Nothing. There is not one thing that you're missing except the winter meetings, and who cares about that? The owners don't like going to the winter meetings. It's a cost center for major league teams and a total waste of time. So the fact that those were canceled on the major league level, that was planned long ago. If we are doing a local hour and the Hurricanes have a coach and a athletic director by March 1st, which I would hope they would, but if they don't, then we're going to be talking about that. But if they do, And we're talking about a lockout still happening on March 1st. Then we're going to have a different type of show where Rob Manfred and Tony Clark badly misunderstood what the landscape is, but not December 1st.
Well, what do you think is going to happen there? Do you think there's the possibility of lost games, or this is just 2 months, 3 months of hard negotiating after a pandemic, after the business was hit hard? Hey, let's figure this out and we'll do it in 3 months, that this is all dancing and posturing to, preparing for those 3 months for a long time.
If it weren't for the pandemic, I would have said everything's going to be fine. We're going to start March 31st. But what we learned in 2020 is that you can play a 60-game season starting the end of July, have a full October, and the owners get their broadcast money. The players get a full year of service, which is what they want, which helps them get closer to free agency, and you crown a World Series champion at the end of the year. Baseball can't have a repeat of 94 where there's no World Series. It's not going to happen. But what baseball owners and players all realize is, you know what? Not so terrible on our bodies if we only have a 60 or an 80 game season. And they never thought that way before, but they lived it in 2020. And that means the edge of the cliff, we've got to get a deal done by this date, is a little later than what it would have been had there been no pandemic.
Oh, so that's interesting. I hadn't considered that the pandemic ends up teaching them that we can have a new business model. We can have a 70-game season. We can do that. We just did.
They just did. And it's even better than the pandemic model because we can have a 70-game season with full attendance starting from minute one in every ballpark.
That means that games will probably be lost, right? Like, if you had to guess, are we going to get a full season next year or a distorted season next year? You would say what? Because I believe that season, weirdly for baseball, and this is the kind of thing that forces a sport to change when historically it hates change, is they were forced into a scenario where a whole lot of people who maybe aren't baseball fans but grew up in this age of stimulus were like, well, I like this a little bit more than 162 games. I like to snort 60 games instead of 162 games. Can you give me that? Are we headed to a new model with this possibly?
It's not a new model, but you're headed to a position where when there's no collective bargaining agreement, the drop dead date has gotten a little later into the summer than it otherwise would have been. So do I think that the lockout will cause missed games? That means you're asking, do I think, will there be a shorter season than 162? And the answer to that is yes.
Hell yeah. I love that 70-game season. How about this? How about two 40-game seasons? Meet me there.
Champions play each other.
Champions play each other. Two 40-game seasons. Let's get nuts.
Upside down. Make
of course the players like this idea. Hey, how about you work half the time? Same money. Of course they love it.
We did a split season. They did in 1981, I believe, but that was a very long time ago. Do you remember that was the split season after a work stoppage where they took the winner of the first half and the winner of the second half? The minor leagues do that every year. There's a winner of the first half and a winner of the second half.
Let's go.
I don't think baseball is going that way at all. I think that it will continue to be in the 150-plus game.
Boo.
Remember, all of the broadcast deals, well, there's one reason. All the local broadcast deals in baseball call for a minimum of 150 games available to the broadcast partner who is paying you all of those rights fees. So you can't go below 150.
Boo! Why not? The numbers were better during the pandemic, were they not? I know we were all starved for content, but all the games had stakes. Charge more money. Come on. Less games.
Fewer.
Fewer. No. Wow, it was. I walked into that.
I
understand. It was a misuse of grammar. Sorry.
David, I was listening to a media podcast on this subject, and I was hearing about how baseball and the Players Association are going to struggle to make up for money that is either going to go flat or go down from regional sports network deals. Is there a concern about what the future of baseball is from a revenue standpoint, and how does that figure into these negotiations?
It's a bigger concern for the players because generally in baseball, the players have gotten around 50% of the revenue in payroll, and that's been pretty consistent over the years. So if the revenue goes down, whether it's through a pandemic or through smaller broadcast deals, that will certainly impact salaries. But I think it's not a matter of the broadcast fees going down. It's a matter of how those broadcasts are made available to the consumer. Right now, in the old days, which I guess is still sort of true, it's cable. So you've got cable and you get a network, the YES Network or SNY or Fox Sports Florida, which is now Bally's Florida. But fans don't want that anymore. Not only are they cutting the cords, but they want streaming. They want it on their device and they want it wherever they are, whenever they want it. But live sports is always going to win the day. So I don't think the value of the broadcast deal will be decreasing anytime soon. And that's proven by what the national broadcast deal was that was just signed in baseball. That was an all-time high. But the way the games are presented to fans is going to change. And that's what baseball's fighting about. They don't want Sinclair or the YES Network or any of these other teams to control their streaming rights through their broadcast partner. They want to control the streaming rights themselves. Early on in my career, we gave the streaming rights over to Fox Sports Florida. Right now, Jeter gave the streaming rights to Bally's Florida. What Rob Manfred wants is for teams to all have their own rights to stream. That's where the money's going
to
be.
Direct to consumer? Is that coming soon, do you think, in baseball?
It's a la carte, right? It used to be I didn't want anyone to be able to get Yankee games in South Florida because then people would choose to get Yankee games and not Marlins games. So Fox Sports Florida would say, you cannot have the Yankees broadcast in our market because if you do, we're not going to pay you as much for the right to show Marlins games because if someone has a chance to spend $6 to get Fox Sports Florida for the Marlins or $6 to get the YES Network to watch the Yankees every day, here in South Florida, they're going to choose the Yankees. Not allowed. But going forward, the consumers have won the day. And I believe going forward, consumers will have the right to choose which teams they want to watch on their package and pay just for those teams.
Whittingham, this is such a fascinating conversation because you're asking him basically, hey, what's all this going to look like in 5-10 years? Because the NFL Network could have, if it wanted to, said, oh, we're not going to do ESPN. We're going to do all our own stuff and we're going to do it with Amazon. We're not going to sell our intellectual rights. You're seeing this throughout creativity right now. A bunch of enterprises, including us, are realizing, wait a minute, if we own our own shit, what do we need you for?
Well, our colleague John Skipper has talked about the pay TV business and how it's still about $100 billion industry. And so there are still companies that want to double dip, that want to take money from streamers while also being on cable because there's still a ton of money to be made from cable. But at some point, the ripcord has to be pulled. And if it's baseball, I don't know who it is, and they go straight direct to consumer. There is no cable package. But what is that price point? What is the amount of money that clubs are going to make that worthwhile? And David, I'd ask you that question.
When ESPN, here's what I would look for. When ESPN has its Sunday night game, and it's or Monday night game, and it's only available on ESPN Plus, that's when things are going to get serious. That's when you'll know the inflection point happened, when they've got the guts to pull it off ESPN cable channel and put it just on the streaming service. Take a look at what Amazon's going to do here with the Thursday night products going forward and see how quickly that infiltrates into the rest of the packages.
They're still lagging behind, though. I think they need a visionary to anticipate things like Web3. I don't know how familiar you are with the concept of Web3 and a decentralized internet that relies on blockchain, but I really think that we're not going to have traditional media partnerships 10 years from now. I think by the time Dan and Sue Gotts are nearing the end of their careers, you might be in a beta test of what is called Web3, where basically people are stood up by their own merit and they have their own subscription bases and the people speak.
Samson, it is changing so much, this climate, that I feel like everyone is sort of tilting their head in this sphere the way that we did when we were looking at ESPN and then wondering to themselves, well, what do we need you for? You know what I mean? Like, what does the NFL need ESPN? Does the NFL, couldn't the NFL, when it started the NFL Network at that time, if it had seen this coming, couldn't it have done even better and bigger business than it's already done? Because now Amazon and Apple and the people with all the money are getting in the game. And Disney, you know, has been trying to buy these NFL games for a long time.
They just don't have the infrastructure yet. And by the way, ESPN said the same thing back to you, which is why you're not there anymore. They said, what do we need him for at that price point?
Exactly.
And that's how a divorce happens, when both sides realize, wow, I'm not being used the way I should be used or being paid the way I could be paid because I am the creator of the content. And your boss, the network, is saying, I cannot justify paying you the number that you are getting paid in salary because I'm not seeing a return on my investment. And I need that return in order for my stock price to continue to increase so I don't lose my job by the board of trustees or the Lucchese family or whoever is the power broker in Miami.
Here's what you're, where you got it wrong, though, like, because we were, while at ESPN, viewed as expensive but not too expensive because we were making money, but not enough money to offset the headaches caused, you know, when we are change in a, you know, in a Disney console. But no, we were making money, but it's got to be such a substantive amount of money because you don't want politics near your stuff. And so,
well, you're different in that way, right? Because you have a different calculus on your brand, because the money that you made for ESPN, they decided the juice was not worth the squeeze, that they didn't want to have to sit on the red button all day listening to you, because frankly, they don't want to listen to you at all. And they don't want to get a memo or a call every single day saying, did you hear what he said this time? Right? If you were making a huge fortune of dollars, then you would have had the power. You still would have left because you still would have felt that they were cramping your style. But if you were making them more money than you were, then they would tend to be able to ignore more and ignore some of your political leanings and ignore some of your rants and raves. But it just wasn't enough.
Anything,
which is great for you, by the way.
Well, it did end up being great. Well, it ended up being great for us because we walked out the door and you saw it. Like, you're saying too expensive. And I'm like, well, DraftKings didn't think so. Like, they didn't think it was too expensive. Like, they just gave the idea of us and the idea of that kind of independence. They just gave us real freedom by saying, nah, we'll just sell your shit. We'll do it for you. And
but it's what you do with that, though, Dan, right? You got the 3-year runway with them and you got the initial investment, but now you've got to keep creating the content and keep delivering the content and keep doing the things you do, because DraftKings is not ESPN. But DraftKings wants to have that sort of clout. And when they do have that sort of clout, people tend to be more conservative the richer they are. The upstart companies, the upstart people tend to take more chances. But once you have all the money, it's funny when you look at people who are charitable, or you look at people who gamble, the more money you have, often the less percentage of your net worth you're willing to gamble.
I want you, David, at some point here to get you and John Skipper together to talk about the mechanics of what the future of the business is going to look like from this realm, because I want sports fans to understand how they're going to be consuming this differently in 10 years, because things are changing. David, have you seen in business this, I don't know if it's the pandemic or what, or just technology, but the swiftness of change of business is shaking because so many people are realizing, with time to think during a pandemic, wait a minute, we've been doing this wrong. We've been doing this inefficiently.
The number one change has been the way people are getting products sent to them instead of going to stores. I did not think it would happen as quickly as the pandemic made it happen. What the pandemic tended to do was to accelerate the downfall of certain businesses and accelerate the boon that came to other types of businesses. If you were late to developing your website, or you are late to being able, remember you complained about ESPN because people were trying to buy your like Levitard shirts, like merchandise, and they couldn't quite figure out how to get it done, how to get it sent to people, and there were production delays. Am I making that up, or did that happen?
No, yeah, that was yes, one of the frustrations there was the idea that we were unable somehow. I mean, Disney pretty good at selling things. We were unable somehow to sell T-shirts for many, many, many months. Sell T-shirts.
Right. They could not fulfill something that you have to be able to do. Why is Amazon so powerful? Because it works. The system works. You go on a website, you make two clicks, and there's a package at your door. That type of way is how sports content, that's what people want. They don't want to search through 75 cable channels anymore. They want to be able to turn on a TV, click a button, and have a thumbnail of the game they want to watch. You click that thumbnail and the game just appears.
Sell T-shirts? They couldn't lock up a web handle.
I've got to tell you guys a funny story. Right before the Moss 50th birthday, have I not told you this story? Because I was so mad, because it was Christmas time and we still hadn't figured out how to sell t-shirts. And it had been, Mike, I don't know, 10 months after, like 10 months with the inability to sell a t-shirt. My agent looked to me after a meeting when somebody just left dinner and looked at me and said, Dan, that is the single worst meeting I've ever been around that didn't involve Bobby Valentine.
And he was right.
What
are you reviewing? Although I would love to end the podcast on that. We have to adhere to the format, David. What is your weekly review?
Well, the way you say it makes me so excited. I think the listeners are so happy right now that you really sold into this.
It's a benchmark.
Well, before you do it, though, is there anything else on the lockout we need to know? Because, again, I think you have an unusually thorough and knowledgeable corner here in this realm. Anything else we need to know that I have been mistaken in not asking you?
No, you just have to know to go to Nothing Personal with David Sampson, and I'm going to do an entire thing today about the lockout that'll go into far more detail, but I unfortunately will not, in my show, be talking about the hurricane situation. So you can get hurricanes here, and you can get lockout there, and then together, we're going to do a movie review right now.
Well, feel free to invite me on Nothing Personal with David Sampson if you want the latest news and developments on the UM front. Or we can do a Twitter Spaces, perhaps, and people can follow you at David P. Sampson on Twitter.
See you later.
What's your review?
14 Peaks. I watched it yesterday. Have you seen it on Netflix yet?
I have not.
Have you heard of it? It's the guy.
There's one guy.
Frone guy from Nepal, who's a mountaineer, decided that he was going to high altitude, climb all 14 mountains in the world that are over 8,000 meters, and he did it all within 7 months. Previously, there's a guy who did it, and it took him 16 years to do it. He did it alpine style, not using oxygen, which is insane. But this guy was climbing Everest and then K2 and then M1 and G2 and G3 and GU, whatever the names are. And this documentary, it was like Free Solo on steroids. The story was fascinating about what would drive someone to be so insane and how dangerous it is. And the highlight was he was on Everest. He took the picture that went viral when there was that line to climb Mount Everest that was at a standstill that looked like traffic on 95 during rush hour climbing Mount Everest. Do you remember that photo at all, Mike?
I do. Even though I'm not that familiar with 14 Peaks, I am familiar with the Twin Peaks. And how do you serve a beer that's 29 degrees cold? How is it not a block of ice? Have you ever been? Great Mozzies.
Good, David Lynch, we're good, done?
No, not that Twin Peaks. You haven't been to the restaurant chain, Twin Peaks?
Never even heard of that restaurant,
Twin Peaks. Oh, man, dude.
Knockoff Hooters.
It is a knockoff Hooters, but they got
overrated.
Have you had the Mozzies? Oh, you're not a Mozzie guy, I forget. But the 29-degree beer on a hot South Florida day, that is incredible.
Spoiler alert.
Twin Peaks, hold on.
Yes, exactly.
The Twin Peaks are boobs.
Just like the
spoiler alert.
Just like the Hooters were boobs.
Most beers are that cold, I believe. You just don't always see the temperature above the bar. No,
it's a great bit of marketing, though.
Coldest beer.
It's fantastic.
Coldest beer.
How old were you when you figured it out, Whitty?
Today. 5 minutes ago.
Whitty, I'm with you. I did not know that Twin Peaks were boobs.
Oh, what? Oh, you're an innocent.
Never saw the show.
Sweet summer child.
Wait, but the show is not that.
It's just, you know.
No, the show is not about boobs.
No, mountains in that show.
I've never heard the phrase Twin Peaks that wasn't involved with the show is what I'm telling you. I've just heard of Twin Peaks and I did not know.
You've never been to the restaurant. You can't have anything on the menu. Don't worry about it.
And what's Mozzie's?
Mozzie sticks, baby.
They're overrated. You agree, David?
Mozzarella sticks?
Yeah, mozzarella.
You never order mozzarella sticks, right, David?
Never, ever. It's fried string cheese.
Boom. Overrated.
You are so simple.
Especially Twin Peaks. I mean, maybe like a fine dining Italian restaurant has good mozz sticks. The mozz sticks at Twin Peaks are not.
Have you had them?
I have had them, I believe.
They're pretty tasty for Mozzie's.
It's like people going to the Olive Garden for the bread.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real.
Oh, you're in New York. I had the best Mozzie stick of my life at a place called Parm there. All right, hit that up, David.
Parm. David, have you been to Parm? It's a chain in New York.
It's freaking great.
I have not been to Parm.
Yo, those Mozzie sticks are serious.
Which is an Italian restaurant on the Upper East Side, but I've not been to Parm.
Thank you for your time, David.
See you later. I'm going to Twin Peaks right now.
Chag Sameach.
Ah, merci beaucoup. Happy Hanukkah. Hey, there's a slice of heaven.
Happy Chanukah.
Can you play? Yeah, play that. Play Smokey Robinson for David. I don't know if he has heard this or not, but we got a personalized cameo for you, David. We wanted to celebrate you and the holidays together, so we got you a personalized
it's
message.
It's personalized. Please ignore the fact that he calls you Michael
from Smokey Robinson.
Hey, Marco, how you doing? Surprise, surprise. This is Smokey Robinson. I know you didn't expect to hear from me, but I was contacted by your sons, Jeff and Jerry, and they told me that you used to live in Detroit across the street from me, and gosh, that's beautiful. How are you doing again? Nice talking to you again, I guess. But anyway, you're living in Vancouver now, and they wanted me to wish you happy Chanukah. I have no idea what Chanukah is, but happy Chanukah because no they said so. Anyway, God bless you, babe. And enjoy Chanukah. Have a wonderful time.
God bless you, babe. Enjoy Chanukah.
There is no way that that's real. That sounded like his voice, though.
It is Smokey Robinson.
It's on Cameo.
It's a video of it.
It's the greatest thing. It's him.
He needs a new agent. See you later.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.